Good evening. This is Russ Werner, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and tonight's host of Sports Today, the one-hour-long show that airs every Tuesday and Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This edition is for Tuesday, March 11th, 2025. We are going to start off tonight with some NBA news from the Phoenix Suns. Suns get much-needed win, topping the Mavericks. This is from Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Suns took care of much-needed business on Sunday's 125-116 win over the shorthanded Dallas Mavericks before a sellout crowd of 20,013 at American Airlines Center. The Suns, at 30-34, are now 1.5 games behind the Mavs, who are 32-33, for the 10th seed and final play-in spot in the Western Conference. Devin Booker led 6 Suns in double figures with 24 points. Kevin Durant scored 21, and Bradley Beal went for 19. Najee Marshall paced the Mavs with a career-high 34 points. The Suns churned out a season-high 68 points in the paint Sunday, surpassing the 60 they scored in a 125-120 win on January 18th at Detroit. The Mavs were down Kyrie Irving, who was out with a season-ending knee injury, and injured big man Anthony Davis with a left abductor strain, Daniel Gafford right knee sprain, and Derek Lively II with right ankle stress fracture. Dallas has lost 5 in a row and 7 of his last 8. The Suns broke the game open in the fourth on an 8-0 run to take a 118-102 lead with 4:36 left to play. Now here are a few takeaways from the win as the Suns continue their 4-game road trip. Monday was at Memphis in the second of a back-to-back. First, get to the rim. Nick Richards putting Najee Marshall on a poster and Grayson Allen driving hard to the basket and drawing a foul in the first half was a clear-cut indicator of Phoenix's game plan on Sunday. Invade the paint. The Suns came into the contest next to last in the NBA in points in the paint at 42 per game. They had 34 at the half against the Mavericks, who were 25th in points allowed in the paint at 50.8. No shot blocker. No problem for Booker and Durant to get to the rim. They both got close and personal with the rim for the dunks. Booker opened the second half with 3 baskets inside 15 feet with the final one leading to a 3-point play and giving Phoenix a 67-54 lead with 10:36 left in the third quarter. Then Richards finished over the top again with an authoritative flush. Late in the third, Allen got a Mavs defender off his feet on a pump fake in the corner and took a sidestep into open space. He usually follows that up with a 3-point attempt, but not this time. Allen drove and scored to give Phoenix a 13-point lead with 2:16 left in the third. Could the Suns mix this type of approach to go along with their 3-point initiative of generating 40-plus attempts per game from deep? Phoenix scored 56 points in the paint Friday at Denver, which, like Dallas, allows 50.8 points in the paint. The key is staying committed to the idea, even if the opponent is knocking down threes on the other end. Now, will Martin play this season? The Suns dealt Yusuf Nurkic and a 2026 first-round pick to Charlotte for Cody Martin, Vesa Micic, and a 2026 second-round pick in a last-minute move before the 2025 trade deadline. Moving Nurkic was the biggest part of the deal, as time had run out on their relationship. The Suns had already traded for Nick Richards and moved him into the starting lineup. Draft picks are always a hot-button topic for the Suns, since they don't have control over them, but Martin has a skill set the Suns could use. He defends, is highly competitive, and can knock down threes. However, he hasn't played one game for the Suns this season due to a sports hernia. Will he eventually see action for the Suns this season? Just getting him healthy, I think, is realistic, and then figuring out how he fits in the rotation, and all that is to be determined, Suns coach Mike Budenholzer said before Sunday's game. And in other NBA action from Sunday's roundup, Thunder top Nuggets in West showdown. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander scored 40 points to lead the Oklahoma City Thunder to their seventh consecutive victory, a 127-103 rout over the visiting Denver Nuggets on Sunday. It was the first of back-to-back games in Oklahoma City for the teams that entered the day in the top two spots in the Western Conference. Nikola Jokic, coming off an historic performance in Friday's overtime win over Phoenix, where he had 31 points, 21 rebounds, and 22 assists, came up just short of his 30th triple-double of the season. Jokic, who made just 2 of 10 three-point attempts, finished with 24 points, 13 rebounds, and 9 assists, along with 3 blocks. After beating Portland on Friday without any of his usual starters, all 5 returned for Oklahoma City. Chet Holmgren contributed 14 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 blocks, while Isaiah Hartenstein had 10 points and 11 boards. Denver's Michael Porter Jr. had 24 points and 15 rebounds, while Christian Braun added 19 points and Jamal Murray scored 17. Next, we have Cavaliers 112, Bucks 100. Max Strus had 17 points to lead 8 Cavaliers, who scored at least 9, as Cleveland won at the Milwaukee Bucks. It was the Cavaliers' 14th consecutive victory, one shy of their season-best streak they started the season with. Donovan Mitchell scored 15, Evan Mobley and Darius Garland added 13 apiece, and Jared Allen tallied 11. Strus also led the team with 9 rebounds. Giannis Antetokounmpo led the Bucks, who lost their second in a row, with 30 points and 9 rebounds. Damian Lillard added 22, while Kyle Kuzma scored 14. We've already talked about the Suns 125 and the Mavericks 116, so we'll move on to the Grizzlies 107, Pelicans 104. Ja Morant scored 32 points. Desmond Bane had 30 to go with 9 rebounds and 8 assists, and the visiting Memphis Grizzlies held on to defeat the New Orleans Pelicans. Scottie Pippen Jr. added 12 points for the Grizzlies, who played without leading scorer Jaren Jackson Jr. with an ankle for the third consecutive game. Trey Murphy III scored 27 points. Karlo Mackovich had 13 points and 11 rebounds. Jordan Hawkins and Kelly Olynyk scored 12 points each. Jose Alvarado had 11 points and 11 assists. Antonio Reeves scored 11 points, and Yais Missy had 10 points and 9 rebounds for the Pelicans, who played without leading scorer Zion Williamson, who was reconditioning, and fourth leading scorer C.J. McCollum, who was resting. Now we have 76ers 126, Jazz 122. Quentin Grimes scored 25 points, and the Philadelphia 76ers received a huge effort from their reserves in a victory over the visiting Utah Jazz. While Grimes scored more points than the other 4 starters combined, the Sixers' bench poured in 78 points, led by Lenny Walker IV with 25, Jarrett Butler 15, Adam Bona 14. Bona added 14 rebounds, and Walker had 11. Kyle Filipowski tied his career high with 25 points, but Utah still lost its 12th consecutive road game. Keyonte George also had 25 points for the Jazz, while Isaiah Collier chipped in 13 points and 10 assists. Philadelphia played without Joel Embiid, Paul George, and Tyrese Maxey, among others. Utah took the court minus key players such as Lauri Markkanen, John Collins, and Jordan Clarkson. We have Timberwolves 141, Spurs 124. Anthony Edwards scored 25 points on 10 for 15 shooting, and the Minnesota Timberwolves pulled away for a win over the San Antonio Spurs in Minneapolis. Naz Reid added 20 points on 8 for 15 shooting off the bench for Minnesota, which won its 5th game in a row. Julius Randle flirted with a triple-double with 14 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds, and Dante DiVincenzo scored 17 off the bench. De'Aaron Fox scored 22 points on 8 of 12 shooting, including 4 for 6 from beyond the arc to lead San Antonio. Harrison Barnes contributed 15 points for the Spurs, who lost for the 7th time in their past 9 games. Next, we have Pistons 119, Trailblazers 112. Cade Cunningham scored 28 points, and Tobias Harris added 20 points and 9 rebounds to help the Detroit Pistons notch a victory over the host Portland Trailblazers. Jalen Duren registered 18 points and 12 rebounds, and Tim Hardaway Jr. had 13 points and 7 rebounds as Detroit snapped a 2-game slide. Dennis Schroeder added 12 points, and Malik Beasley had 10 as the Pistons completed a 2-game season sweep of the Trailblazers. Anna Fernie Simmons scored 34 points for Portland and posted his third 30-point effort in the last 4 games. Jeremy Grant had 25 points for the Trailblazers, who lost for the 4th time in their past 5 games. Scoot Henderson scored 15 points, and Shaedon Sharpe added 12 for Portland, which was out-rebounded 54-41. And finally, it's the Clippers 111, Kings 110 in overtime. James Harden scored 29 points, and Kawhi Leonard added 17 with the game-winning basket at the overtime buzzer as the Los Angeles Clippers helped their playoff prospects by rallying for a victory over the visiting Sacramento Kings in Inglewood, California. Ivaka Zubek scored 22 points with 14 rebounds, and Derek Jones Jr. also had 17 for the Clippers, who were without leading scorer Norman Powell with a hamstring for the 9th time in the past 10 games. Los Angeles was also without head coach Tyronn Lue because of back pain, while assistant coach Brian Shaw led the team. DeMar DeRozan scored 31 points with 10 assists, and Zach LaVine added 30 points for the Kings, who lost for the 2nd time in their last 7 games and fell to 8-6 since LaVine made his debut with the team on February 5th. Jonas Valanciunas grabbed 17 rebounds with 9 points, and Keegan Murray had 15 points for Sacramento. Now we'll move over to college basketball, starting with the University of Arizona men's team. UA has work to do before tourney. This is by Bruce Pascoe of the Arizona Daily Star. While Arizona notably avenged each of its 6 Pac-12 losses 2 seasons ago, the Big 12's bloated membership doesn't allow for such a thing very easily. The Wildcats weren't scheduled for a second crack at Kansas State and Houston after losing to them, and lost to BYU and Iowa State after beating those two earlier in the season. They avenged only a January 18 loss at Texas Tech by beating the Red Raiders 3 weeks later at McHale Center. But Arizona might get a chance on Thursday to make up for its most recent pain. Kansas, which handed Arizona an 83-76 loss on Saturday before a rowdy Senior Day crowd at Allen Fieldhouse, will be staring at the Wildcats again in the Big 12 tournament quarterfinals if the Jayhawks can beat the winner of a first-round game between 2 lower-seed teams, number 11 Utah and number 14 UCF. The Wildcats, at 20-11 overall, 14-6 in the Big 12, finished in a third-place tie with BYU, who was 23-8, 14-6 in conference, but earned the number 3 seed because they beat second-place Texas Tech and the Cougars did not. UA and BYU beat each other in head-to-head competition. If it does happen, Arizona might start by finding a way to better contain Kansas center Hunter Dickinson, if that's at all possible. Once again an All-America candidate, the 7'2", fifth-year center had a game-high 33 points on 15 of 23 shooting and 10 rebounds, even stepping back to hit 1 of 2 threes and a mid-range jumper with 2:18 left that put Arizona more than a possession behind for the rest of the game. Then there's that perimeter defense. Giving up double-digit threes in recent games against BYU, Iowa State, and ASU, the Wildcats held Kansas to 3 of 11 three-point shooting in the first half, but 5 of 10 in the second. Part of that problem with Kansas's Zeke Mayo threw in 3 of 4 threes after halftime to finish with a 5 of 7 effort from beyond the arc that dazzled the rowdy Senior Day sellout crowd at Allen Fieldhouse. And over at ASU men's basketball, ASU regular season ends with a loss to Texas Tech by Michelle Gardner of the Arizona Republic. It's been more than 2 months since the Arizona State men's basketball team has won a game on its home floor. It's going to have to wait a whole lot longer. The Sun Devils closed out the regular season against number 9 Texas Tech on Saturday at Desert Financial Arena, and the game followed an all-too-familiar pattern as ASU battled, only to be dealt an 85-57 setback by the Red Raiders, who are 24-7, 15-5 in the Big 12. Texas Tech finishes the regular season second in the Big 12 to Houston. ASU at 13-18, 4-16 in the Big 12, last won a home game on January 4th against Colorado in the second conference game of the season. This marked the Sun Devils' 9th straight home loss. The Sun Devils will play their first round game of the Big 12 tournament against Kansas State, who is 15-16, 9-11 in the Big 12, on a Tuesday at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. It will be the third meeting between the teams. ASU won the most recent game, 66-54 in Manhattan. Kansas State defeated ASU in Tempe, 71-70 earlier in the season. Saturday was another game in which Hurley had a limited supply of players. Only 5 of those were supposed to be key rotation players, with the only other 2 doing so out of necessity. Senior guard Adam Miller missed the game with hip and oblique injuries. Freshman forward Jaden Quaintance was out for the 7th time, now with a knee injury after he had earlier been slowed by an ankle sprain. Count B.J. Freeman, who was dismissed from the team, and thus 3 starters ASU is effectively down. Despite being shorthanded, ASU battled. Texas Tech's Christian Anderson banked in a 3-pointer at the buzzer before halftime to expand the Red Raiders' narrow lead to 4 at 36-32. The first 20 minutes featured 6 ties and 6 lead changes. The game got away from ASU midway through the second half. ASU shot a respectable 47.8, 11 for 23 in the first half, but shot only 28.6%, 8 for 28 in the second. Bashir Jaheed led ASU with 22 points, matching his season high. Now in the Big 12 tournament, the top 4 teams, number 1 Houston, 2 Texas Tech, 3 Arizona, and 4 BYU, get double byes. Then number 5 Iowa State, number 6 Kansas, number 7 Baylor, and number 8 West Virginia get single byes. So on Tuesday's first round games will be number 12 Oklahoma State versus number 13 Cincinnati. Game 2 will be number 9 TCU versus number 16 Colorado. Game 3 will be number 10 Kansas State versus number 15 Arizona State. And Game 4 will be number 11 Utah versus number 14 UCF. Then the second round on Wednesday will be Iowa State will play the winner of Game 1 between Oklahoma State and Cincinnati. West Virginia will play the winner of TCU versus Colorado. Baylor will play the winner of K-State versus Arizona State. And Kansas will play the winner of Utah versus UCF. Then the quarterfinals will be on Thursday, with the top 4 teams playing the remaining 4 winning teams. Semifinals on Friday, and the championship is Saturday, March 15th at 5 p.m. And over at Grand Canyon Men, GCU will be number 2 WAC tournament seed. Grand Canyon lost its first overtime game in 6 years, falling at Abilene Christian 82-81, assuring it will be the number 2 seed in next week's WAC tournament in Las Vegas. The Lopes at 23-7, 13-3 in the WAC, open on Wednesday night at Orleans Arena against number 7 seed UT Arlington, who is 13-17, 6-10, at 8:30 p.m. Utah Valley at 23-7, 15-1 in the conference, clinch the regular season title and will be the number 1 seed. And over at the Women's Big 12 tournament, which happened this past weekend, the number 8 seed University of Arizona lost on Thursday to number 9 seed Colorado, 61-58. And over at ASU Women, the number 15 seed Arizona State on Wednesday defeated number 10 seed Cincinnati, 82-75, but lost to number 7 seed Iowa State on Thursday, 96-88. In the finals of the conference, Number one seed TCU defeated number four seed West Virginia 71-65 on Saturday. And number two seed Baylor defeated number three seed Oklahoma State 84-74. And in the championship match, number one TCU defeated number two Baylor 64-59. And over at GCU women, they won both of their games this past weekend. On Thursday, they defeated Utah Tech at Utah Tech 74-42. And on Saturday, they won against Abilene Christian at home 70-57. Their first game in the WAC tournament will be Wednesday, a second round game, against the winner of Utah Tech or Seattle U. And over at Northern Arizona University, the men's team, on their Big Sky Championship tournament over the weekend, they won on Saturday against Eastern Washington 66-53, but lost to Montana on Sunday 74-65. And the NAU women won their second round game on Sunday against Sacramento State 69-65, and will play the winner of number 3 Idaho and number 6 Montana today. And in other Division I conferences in the women's roundup from over the weekend, number 4 UCLA beats number 2 USC for the Big Ten title. Lauren Betts scored 13 of her 17 points in the second half, as number 4 UCLA rallied from a 13-point third-quarter deficit to capture its first Big Ten tournament title with a 72-67 victory over number 2 Southern California on Sunday afternoon in Indianapolis. The second-seeded Bruins at 30-2 avenged two regular season losses to the top-seeded Trojans, who were 28-3, by holding Big Ten Player of the Year Juju Watkins, who had 29 points, scoreless during the defining 11-minute stretch of the second half. The 6'7" Betts finished with 5 rebounds, 4 steals, and 4 blocks, 2 on Watkins in the fourth quarter, and Kiki Rice added 13 points and 8 assists as UCLA made its pitch for the number 1 overall seed in the NCAA tournament. USC also hopes to garner a number 1 seed when the field is revealed next week. Watkins finished 8 of 29 from the field and 9 of 10 from the foul line with 6 rebounds, 4 steals, and 5 turnovers as UCLA's Gabriela Juarez hawked her with consistent help from other Bruins. Next, we have number 5 South Carolina 64, number 1 Texas 45. Chloe Kitts had 15 points and 9 rebounds, and South Carolina completed its dominant run through the Southeastern Conference tournament with a victory over Texas in the championship game in Greenville, South Carolina. Tessa Johnson added 14 points, and Sanaya Fegan and Joyce Edwards scored 11 each for the top-seeded Gamecocks, who were 30-3, who won their previous two games in the tournament by 21 and 18 points respectively and never trailed Sunday. South Carolina won for the second time in 3 meetings this season against the number 2 seeded Longhorns, who are 31-3, who had their 15-game winning streak snapped. For Texas, Taylor Jones had 14 points and 8 rebounds, and Rory Harmon scored 14, but SEC Player of the Year Madison Booker had just 3 points through 3 quarters before finishing with 10 points and 10 rebounds. Next, we have number 11 Duke 76, number 8 North Carolina State 62. Ashlyn Jackson and Aluchi Akinawa each scored 22 points as Duke rallied to win its first Atlantic Coast Conference tournament title since 2013, defeating North Carolina State in Greensboro, North Carolina. The Blue Devils overcame a 14-point second-quarter deficit, earning their first ACC tournament title under fifth-year coach Kara Lawson. Duke shot 45.2% from the field, including 47.1% from three-point range. And we've already talked a little bit about number 7 TCU 64, number 18 Baylor 59, but here's a little summary of it. Haley Van Lith has led TCU all season, and she did it again as TCU defeated Baylor for the Big 12 championship at the T-Mobile Center in Kansas City, Missouri. Van Lith led the Horned Frogs with 20 points to help TCU capture its first title in program history. It was also the team's first appearance in the championship game. Baylor, meanwhile, was playing in its 16th Big 12 title game, the most in conference history. The Bears have won a record 11 tournament titles. TCU, at 31-3, also got a double-double from Sedona Prince with 12 points and 14 rebounds. Donovan Hunter and Madison Connor each had 11 points for TCU. Aaronette Vonleh led Baylor, who was 27-7, with 20 points. Sarah Andrews added 13 points, and Yaya Felder had 12. The lead in the third quarter fluctuated between 7 and 12 points, with TCU taking a 51-43 lead into the final frame. Felder had 10 points in the third, and Vonleh had 8. And in a side note for ASU women's basketball, candidates for ASU women's hoops coach. This is by Jenna Ortiz of the Arizona Republic. Arizona State women's basketball is making a big change after athletic director Graham Rossini announced on Saturday that head coach Natasha Adair isn't returning next season. The Sun Devils were 10-22, 3-15 in the Big 12, concluded the season on Thursday with a 96-88 loss to Iowa State in the second round of the Big 12 tournament. Adair was 29-62 with a 3-19 record overall and 7-47, 129 record in conference play. Adair had a tough act to follow in 2022 when Charlie Turner Thorne retired after becoming the winningest coach in ASU history in her 25 seasons in Tempe. ASU has to move quickly, considering the transfer portal opens on March 25th. Several great candidates could fill the vacancy, including one in Phoenix. Here are some possible candidates. First, Molly Miller from Grand Canyon. Miller took over GCU's program in 2020 and has transformed the Lopes into one of the most dominant programs in the NCAA this season. Through Miller's guidance, GCU is on the cusp of making its first Division I NCAA tournament appearance. GCU's 27 consecutive wins are the nation's longest active win streak. The Lopes went undefeated in Western Athletic Conference play and are the third team to do so over the last 9 years. Miller, who is 38, is 294-54 in 11 seasons as a college head coach, including 29-2 this season at Grand Canyon. It would be the first time ASU has hired a successful coach from GCU. Beach volleyball head coach Kristen Rohr was at GCU until ASU hired her in 2023. She took the Sun Devils to the NCAA tournament. SEC schools are contacting her, but if she wants to stay in Phoenix and in a Power 4 program, she could fill ASU's vacancy. Next is Brianne January from Motor City Cruise. ASU has seen how hiring an alum can activate the fan base, and if the Sun Devils want to hire a former player to ignite the program, January is the candidate. The 38-year-old's jersey hangs in the rafters at Desert Financial Arena after she played on ASU's NCAA Elite Eight teams in 2007 and 2009. She then went on to a 14-year WNBA career, including the 2018-19 with the Mercury. She learned under Turner Thorne while on her ASU staff in 2017 and 18. After she retired, then-Connecticut Sun head coach Stephanie White hired her as an assistant in 23-24. She's currently an assistant with the NBA G League Motor City Cruise on ASU alum Jamel McMillan's staff. Next is Nikki Blue from the Los Angeles Sparks. Blue is a familiar name for both ASU and Mercury fans. Blue was an assistant coach on Turner Thorne's staff from 2019 through 22, and then was hired as an assistant for the Mercury in 2022. When Vanessa Nygaard was fired, she took over as the interim head coach for the final 28 games in 2023. She's back in the WNBA and was recently hired as an assistant with the Los Angeles Sparks. The 40-year-old starred in college at UCLA and played five seasons, 2006 through 10, in the WNBA. She's also been an assistant at UNLV, Cal State Bakersfield, and Grand Canyon. And finally, Lindy LaRoque from UNLV. another successful coach at a mid-major school who could be a great candidate for turning around ASU. The 35-year-old has gone 126-28 in 5 seasons at UNLV. She played at Stanford and also was a Cardinal assistant 2017-20 under Tara Vanderveer. She's led the 26-6 Lady Rebels to their fourth straight Mountain West regular season title. In 23-24, LaRoque became the first head coach in Lady Rebels history to reach the 100-win mark in just 4 seasons. And that will put us at about our halfway point in this evening's sports today. Now over to some baseball news, starting with the Major League Baseball Arizona Diamondbacks. Burns' dominance continues. Grichuk homers. D-backs game report, Diamondbacks 14, Rangers 1. Right-hand pitcher Corbin Burns threw well again, making his fourth start of the spring. Burns fired 4 scoreless innings, allowing just 2 hits and 1 walk while striking out 5. His results so far this spring have been nothing short of fantastic. 1 run on 9 1/3 innings with 2 walks and 13 strikeouts. Burns is pleased with the way things have progressed so far. I think kind of the last piece was pairing both the cutter command with the spin, and we are able to do that today, he said. Now it's just about getting built up to where we want to be and continue to kind of work on tweaking things a little here and a little there. His spring has been so good that he actually took a positive out of an inning that didn't go as planned. After the fourth inning began with a walk and a single, he was able to work out of the jam without allowing a run. You definitely don't want to go through a completely clean spring training and never get to that feeling when you get into the season and you haven't done it before, Burns said. It's good to have some of those higher stress innings. The Diamondbacks' offense exploded in the fifth inning. The Diamondbacks led 4-0 entering the fifth, but blew the game open in the bottom of the inning, scoring 10 times. An outburst punctuated by a grand slam from designated hitter Caleb Roberts, who entered the game as a pinch runner earlier in the inning. The Diamondbacks collected 9 hits and 2 walks in the inning, including doubles by frontline players third baseman Eugenio Suarez and right fielder Randall Grichuk. It was Grichuk's second extra base hit of the day after he homered off right-hand pitcher Nathan Eovaldi in the fourth inning. Catcher Jose Herrera exited the game with an injury. Herrera was involved in a minor collision at home plate in the top of the sixth inning, but the initial report suggests the injury is not overly serious. He left with what was being called a right wrist soreness. Everything looks okay, just soreness, bench coach Jeff Bannister said, but we'll reevaluate him in the morning. Then on the flip side of the injury front, left fielder Lourdes Gurriel Jr. returned to the lineup on Sunday, his first game action since departing Wednesday's contest with hamstring discomfort. The Diamondbacks salvaged a split in Las Vegas. After falling on Saturday, the Diamondbacks prevailed 7-5 over the Athletics on Sunday at Las Vegas Ballpark. Shortstop Geraldo Perdomo reached base 3 times with a single and a pair of walks, and DH Ketel Marte and first baseman Josh Naylor each had a single and a walk. Second baseman Demetrio Crisantes, one of the club's top prospects, laced an RBI double to left center field in the 7th inning. In another Diamondbacks article, Montgomery crushed in first spring outing, by Nick Piacoro of the Arizona Republic again. Arizona Diamondbacks lefty Jordan Montgomery's first appearance of the Cactus League looked like many of his outings from last season. An inauspicious performance for a pitcher looking to rebound from a miserable year. Montgomery was knocked around by the Cincinnati Reds on Saturday afternoon, giving up 5 runs in 1/3 of an inning. Montgomery is in competition for the 5th spot in the Diamondbacks' rotation. It is only 1 game, but it also does not bode well as he tries to show he deserves a spot over right-handers Brandon Fott and Ryan Nelson. Entering the game to begin the bottom of the 4th, Montgomery gave up 2 hits, walked 2, and hit another. Just super rushed and tense and trying to muscle everything, Montgomery said. I've just got to take a chill pill and relax. Montgomery said he is always eager to make his first outing of the spring and he admitted he might have been all the more amped up given that he is coming off a brutal 2024 season in which he logged a 6.23 ERA in 117 innings. "I was so excited to get out there," he said. "Definitely disappointed, but just get back to the drawing board tomorrow with pitching coach Brian Kaplan," said Diamondbacks bench coach Jeff Banister. "It's a situation where you don't try to over-evaluate a guy's first outing. It's been a while since he's been out there. It looks like he is trying to find some rhythm, like he was fighting himself trying to find a rhythm out there. I expect he's going to be better his next time out." And now over to some PGA golf news. Henley chips in for eagle to win Arnold Palmer Invitational. Russell Henley seemed surprised that he found a way to win the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Henley eagled the 16th hole Sunday to vault in front and win at Bay Hill Club and Lodge in Orlando, Florida. "I tried to work really hard in all aspects of my game to try to put myself in position to win tournaments and compete at the highest possible level on the biggest and best courses," Henley said. "Just crazy that it happened like that." Henley's 2-under par 70 put him at 11-under 277, giving him his first victory since the 2022 Worldwide Technology Championship, a span of 854 days. It marks his fifth victory on the PGA Tour and his first at a signature event. He won by one shot over third-round leader Colin Morikawa, who posted a 72 with a par on the final hole. "I've grown up watching this event and just seeing all the amazing finishes coming down the stretch, and you never really think you're going to get that opportunity to come down the 18th and make a par to win," Henley said. "It's really just hard to take in right now." The key moment came when Henley's eagle chip from just off the 16th green found the cup from about 54.5 feet away, sending him from one shot behind Morikawa to one in front. The ball had lots of momentum and might have gone considerably past the hole. "Sometimes you get a good break like that, and it hits the pin and goes in," Henley said. "Guess I needed to watch it on the replay to see how fast it was moving, but kind of surreal." Henley was 2-over for the day through 10 holes before getting on track. He had birdies on number 12 and 14 before his big move. "It's so hard and difficult around this place," he said. "I just tried to stay really tough this week." Morikawa, a 2-time major champion, whose last victory was in October of 2023, had a card with 3 birdies and 3 bogeys Sunday. Canada's Corey Connors shot 71, was third at 9-under, and Michael Kim shot 69, placed fourth at 8-under. The results were encouraging for golfers going into the Players' Championship in the coming week. "I think my ball striking was really strong. I think I putted quite well," Connors said. "Most of the days I was hitting my lines. And yeah, I got a lot of freedom with my iron play. Hit a lot of great shots this week. And I think that will be important to continue next week." Kim shook off an opening round 75 to end up in contention. "The driver and just ball striking in general, I feel like I did really well," Kim said. "And if the putter heats up in the next week, hopefully I'll have a great chance." Keegan Bradley shot 64, tied with Austria's Sepp Straka, 69, for 5th place at 7-under, while Ireland's Shane Lowry, the leader at the tournament's midway mark, shot 70 and finished 7th at 6-under. And in another PGA Tour event, Phillips wins Puerto Rico Open. The Puerto Rico Open has had 10 first-time winners during its 16-year existence. No, make that 11. Carl Phillips, making just his 4th PGA Tour start, won the 2025 Puerto Rico Open on Sunday, holding off Rasmus Nygaard-Petersen and Joseph Bramlett to win the trophy. Leading by a shot heading into the final round, Phillips birdied the 3rd, eagled the 6th, and birdied the 8th, to make the turn in 31 at the Grand Reserve Club in Rio Grande. His career earnings before winning in Puerto Rico was $56,410. He can now add a check for $720,000 to that total. More importantly, he earns a PGA Tour exemption through the end of the 2027 season, plus entry into the 2025 Players' Championship next week, as well as the 2025 PGA Championship. And on a side note to that, Woods opts out of entering the Players. Tiger Woods has passed on his final chance to play in the Players' Championship. Woods' name was absent when the Players' field was released Friday by the PGA Tour. It's his final year of eligibility off his victory in the Masters in 2019. Woods, an 82-time PGA Tour winner, 15-time major champion, and a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, won't be eligible in 2026 unless he wins a PGA Tour event over the next 12 months, gets into the top 50 in the World Golf Rankings by the end of next year's Cognizant Classic, or finishes among the top 70 in the 2025 FedEx Cup points list. Given his lack of starts, Woods still hasn't played this season, so those goals seem pretty hard to reach even for him. Woods currently is 1,129th in this week's World Golf Rankings. However, every other big PGA Tour star will be at the Players Stadium course at TPC Sawgrass when the tour's flagship event begins on Thursday. And in some motorsports, starting with NASCAR, Bell edges Hamlin to win third NASCAR race in a row. Christopher Bell remained scorching hot in the desert, dominating the field once again for his third consecutive win of the season. The 30-year-old held off Denny Hamlin on two restarts inside of 16 laps to go, the last being a three-dash lap, to secure the 10th victory of his NASCAR Cup Series career by 0.049 seconds over his Joe Gibbs Racing teammate for the second closest finish ever at Phoenix Raceway. Last year's winner of the Shriners Children's 500 was able to repeat in convincing fashion by leading a race-high 105 laps and winning Stage 2 in the process. In securing three straight victories, Bell became the first driver since third-place finisher Kyle Larson in 2021 to do so at the sport's top level. From the drop of the green flag, expectations of unpredictability and chaos immediately lived up to the billing throughout the entirety of the Shriners Children's 500. Within 11 laps, there were already two cautions, the first coming out for Catherine Legge's on lap 5. The female veteran making her Cup debut lost control exiting turn 2 and spun with a tight race car. Luckily, she was able to minimize her mistake and avoid any damage. Unfortunately, the four-time sports car winner got caught up in another incident later with Daniel Suarez and ended her day early with a 30th place finish. Following the second stoppage to the race, the field got a first look at the softer option tires in action when Ryan Preece took the opportunity and ran. Entering pit road 25th, he restarted 28th on lap 15 and charged all the way up to third by the end of the 60-lap segment. William Byron started from the pole and dominated the opening segment, leading 55 of 60 laps en route to Stage 1 win. After leading 74 consecutive laps into Stage 2, he lost the top spot with option tires coming into play and was never able to get back into contention for his second win at Phoenix. Although running inside the top 5 for the majority of the day, he didn't quite have the speed Bell had. Byron's shot at getting his second victory this season took a hit with about 45 laps to go when the 8th caution of the day flew for debris. Surrendering to pit road for option tires to set himself up for the final run of the race, he got caught up one lap down and was only able to drive to a 6th place finish. On the same restart, Preece made his march to the front. Leader and second place starter Joey Logano was penalized with a restart violation for dipping below the yellow line. Able to prevent himself from losing a lap around the 1 mile short track, the reigning champion and race winner at Phoenix mounted a masterful rally from the rear to lead about halfway through Stage 2, courtesy of the option tires. Unfortunately, he couldn't hold off Bell for the segment win, but managed to hang on for runner-up and 9 stage points. Forced to use both sets of his option tires early, Logano gave a valiant effort to defend his wins at Phoenix, but was forced to settle for a 14th place day. Hometown hero Michael McDowell saw his great start to the weekend go from bad to worse throughout Sunday's festivities. After qualifying 7th, the driver from Glendale had to drop to the rear of the field for the start as the team changed the steering rack. Clawing back up to 8th by lap 93, he had a right rear tire let go, the first of two, which relegated him to 27th. The cautions kept coming all day, specifically 10, which was the most of the next-gen era. The most carnage came on lap 100 for an 11-car pileup. Racing four wide in turn two, Ty Gibbs squeezed the likes of Justin Haley, Chase Briscoe, and Carson Hocevar into the wall, triggering a vicious wreck on the backstretch that also claimed Brad Keselowski, Riley Herbst, Noah Gregson, Cole Custer, and Shane Van Ginsburg. Rounding out the top 10 after Bell, Hamlin, and Larson were Josh Berry, Chris Buescher, Byron, Alex Bowman, Kyle Busch, Zane Smith, and Chase Elliott. Their next race will be this coming Sunday, March 16th, the Pennzoil 400 presented by Jiffy Lube at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, Las Vegas, Nevada, 267 laps, 400.5 miles. And in the NHRA Pro Series drag racing first event of the season, Brown, Green, Glenn, and Herrera score victories at the Gator Nationals opener. Defending Top Fuel world champion Antron Brown kicked off the 2025 NHRA season with a victory on Sunday at Gainesville Raceway, defeating defending event winner Sean Langdon in the final round of the 56th Emily Motor Oil NHRA Gator Nationals. Chad Green in Funny Car, Dallas Glenn in Pro Stock, and Gage Herrera in Pro Stock Motorcycle also won the first of 20 races during the 2025 NHRA Mission Foods Drag Racing Series season. Brown went 3.673 seconds at 333.9 mile per hour in his 11,000 horsepower Matco Tools dragster to slip past Langdon's 3.684 at 332.67 as the four-time world champion won for the 81st time in his career. Brown, who qualified number one, defeated Krista Baldwin, Clay Milliken, and Steve Tarns to reach the final round before picking up his second career win at Gainesville Raceway. Chad Green opened his 2025 Funny Car season in standout fashion, going 3.921 at 329.18 mile per hour in his 11,000 horsepower Bondcoat Ford Mustang Funny Car to roll past Ron Capps and earn his first career Gator Nationals win. This will be one Green surely remembers, as Green went 3.922 and 3.921 in back-to-back rounds to claim his second career victory. He defeated Paul Lee, Buddy Hall, and Matt Hagen to reach the final round, posting a series of consistent runs to get past a loaded Funny Car class. Green will now leave Gainesville Raceway with the points lead for the first time in his career, and also plenty of momentum after a magical performance on Sunday. In Pro Stock, Dallas Glenn extracted some bit of revenge on his KB Titan Racing teammate Greg Anderson, defeating the reigning world champion to open the 2025 season with a run of 6.549 at 211.13 in his RAD Torque Systems Chevrolet Camaro Pro Stocker. It is Glenn's 14th career win and second at Gainesville, the other was 2022, and helped make up for Anderson picking up the win at a winner-take-all final round with the championship on the line last November at the NHRA Finals in Pomona. Glenn defeated Brandon Miller, Troy Coughlin Jr., and Corey Reed to advance to the finals and rolled to the win against Anderson, who ran into trouble right off the starting line. It was Glenn's first win in five final round matchups with Anderson, a strong sign the young phenom could be in for a big season. There appears to be no stopping Gage Herrera at Gainesville Raceway, as the back-to-back defending world champion in Pro Stock Motorcycle remained unbeaten at the historic facility, picking up his third straight Gator Nationals victory with a run of 6.722 at 200.23 mile per hour on his RevZilla Mission Foods Vance & Hines Suzuki to defeat rival Matt Smith. It's Herrera's 22nd win since the start of the 2023 campaign, an incredible run that started with his first career win in Gainesville. He knocked off Gino Scali, Kelly Klontz, and Chase Van Sant to reach the final round, leaving first against Smith and picking up the victory. He also matches Eddie Krajewik as the only riders to win three straight Pro Stock motorcycle races at Gainesville Raceway. And their next race will be March 21st through the 23rd, the NHRA Arizona Nationals at Firebird Motorsports Park in Chandler, Arizona. In some miscellaneous late-breaking news from the NFL football, Sam Darnold to Seahawks on a three-year, $100.5 million deal, sources say. The Seattle Seahawks have found their replacement for Geno Smith, agreeing to a three-year, $100.5 million deal with former Minnesota Vikings quarterback Sam Darnold, sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter. The deal includes $55 million guaranteed, sources told Schefter. The Seahawks added Darnold 3 days after agreeing to trade Smith, their starting quarterback for the last three seasons, to the Las Vegas Raiders for a third-round draft pick. Darnold's deal is the latest move in what has been a busy stretch for the Seahawks, who agreed to trade star receiver DK Metcalf to the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday, and also released receiver Tyler Lockett and four other veteran players last week. Darnold reunites in Seattle with new offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak, who was the San Francisco 49ers' passing game coordinator in 2023 when Darnold backed up Brock Purdy. Darnold, who's 27, blossomed in the Vikings' scheme last season with coach Kevin O'Connell's careful guidance, leading Minnesota to 14 wins after winning a total of 21 games in his previous six seasons. He ranked fifth in the NFL in passing yards with 4,319 and touchdown passes with 35, while earning his first career Pro Bowl invitation. Darnold, however, appeared to hit his ceiling at the end of the season. His final two starts were his worst, as he threw a combined 23 off-target throws and took 11 sacks as the Vikings lost games to the Detroit Lions and Los Angeles Rams by a combined score of 58-18. The Vikings signed Darnold in 2024 as insurance for their plan to draft their quarterback of the future. His primary job was to give the team an option good enough that they would not be forced to play that quarterback, who turned out to be J.J. McCarthy, until he was ready. Darnold, however, had a strong training camp and was in line to be the Vikings' Week 1 starter even before McCarthy suffered a season-ending torn meniscus in his right knee during the preseason opener. The number 3 pick of the 2018 draft, Darnold spent 3 seasons with the New York Jets, 2 with the Carolina Panthers, and 1 as backup with the San Francisco 49ers before signing with the Vikings in what was widely viewed as his final opportunity to prove he could be an NFL starter. In some other NFL moves, Jets reach 2-year, $40 million deal with quarterback Justin Fields, sources say. 1 month after saying goodbye to Aaron Rodgers, the New York Jets addressed the quarterback position on the first day of free agent negotiating period, agreeing to terms Monday with former Pittsburgh Steelers backup Justin Fields, sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter. Fields, 26, will sign a 2-year, $40 million contract that includes $30 million in guarantees, the sources said. The former Chicago Bears first-round pick is expected to be the Jets' opening day starter, ahead of holdover backup Tyrod Taylor, but this isn't a long-term commitment. The Jets, who also could add a quarterback in the draft, can reevaluate the position after the 2025 season. Rodgers has emerged as a quarterback option for the Steelers, league sources told Schefter on Monday. In another article, ex-Jets Broncos quarterback Wilson agrees to sign with the Dolphins. Free agent quarterback Zach Wilson reached an agreement on a 1-year, $6 million fully guaranteed deal that could grow to $10 million with the Miami Dolphins, sources told Adam Schefter on Monday from ESPN. The move brings Wilson, drafted number two by the New York Jets in 2021, back to the AFC East and gives the Dolphins a veteran backup behind starter Tua Tagovailoa. And now with the minute or so we have to go in this evening's sports today, I'm going to run down the standings in the NBA. The top 10 teams make the playoffs. 1 through 6 get a first-round bye. 7 through 10 will have to play in the play-in. In the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers are on top at 54-10, followed by the Boston Celtics at 46-18. The New York Knicks are 40-23. The Milwaukee Bucks are 36-27. Indiana Pacers are 35-27. And number 6, Detroit Pistons are 36-29. The number 7 is the Atlanta Hawks at 30-34, followed by the Orlando Magic at 30-35. Miami Heat at 29-34, and number 10 is the Chicago Bulls at 26-38. Then in the number 11 spot, not making the playoffs at this time, Philadelphia 76ers are 22-41, and the Brooklyn Nets are 21-42. Then in the Western Conference, the Oklahoma City Thunder are on top at 53-11, followed by the Los Angeles Lakers at 40-22. The Denver Nuggets are 41-23. Memphis Grizzlies are 40-24. The Houston Rockets are 39-25. And number 6 is the Golden State Warriors at 36-28. The number 7 is Minnesota Timberwolves at 37-29. LA Clippers are 35-29. Sacramento Kings are 33-30. And number 10 is the Dallas Mavericks at 32-33. Then in the number 11 spot currently is the Phoenix Suns at 30-34. Followed by the Portland Trail Blazers at 28-37. And that's going to wrap up tonight's edition of Sports Today for Tuesday, March 11th, 2025. I'm Russ Warner, tonight's host of Sports Today and a volunteer leader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a good evening and stay tuned for more. Don't forget, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then under Programming Links, left-click on On Demand Podcast. Also, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.